Bing, check, check, 1, 2, 3, and we're good. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm your host for this evening, Riley Blanton. Joining me, as always, is my lovely sister, Bethany.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the galaxy.
And once again, is my co-host, Mark.
Hey, everybody. Me and Whistler. We're here fighting it out for the mic.
Well, see, I just decided to completely turn everything on its head, and usually I'm like, hello, everyone. Let's pause. Let the music play for a moment. Welcome back. You know, kind of doing the radio style thing. Nope, not today. You have to keep things mixed up a little bit. We've got a great episode for you guys lined up. We're going to talk about the latest episode of The Clone Wars, some of the most recent Star Wars Episode 7 news, including the confirmation that J.J. Abrams is indeed our director. We have our leader! I think we need some kind of anthem. And joining us for the first part of the episode, actually joining us for the whole episode, we're really glad to have her, is the founder, the chief executive officer, the empress, the grand lady, the Savannah Kiefer of Pandas, Lightsabers, and I'm forgetting one. And oh my.
But cameras.
And of course, what does she do to take pictures of those pandas and lightsabers? Photography. Savannah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I think I like the title of Empress. I'm going to start using that.
That's like free. That's all yours. But how have you been? We met at Celebration for the first time, and man, it looks like things have been whirlwind for you over there.
Yeah, I've been great. Celebration was awesome. It was so nice seeing you guys there. I was so excited to see you guys in person. And then since I've just been busy, and I did Long Beach Comic Con as well. Looking forward to episode 7 and all that stuff going on. So, yeah, I've been great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So how was Long Beach? I heard it was fun.
Oh, my gosh. Long Beach was awesome. That was my first actual Comic-Con, my first, like, non-Star Wars convention. And I was really impressed. That's why I'm going to do MegaCon here in Florida in March, because I really like Long Beach Comic-Con. It was something different. I like Marvel and DC and things like that a little bit. So it was fun getting to see cosplayers from those franchises as well.
Yeah, I mean, standard comic book conventions definitely are different than a Star Wars Celebration or Star Wars Weekends. And that was actually my first experience doing anything as far as like a sci-fi convention, which is a small local convention. They haven't even done it the past year or two. But at that time, it was called AdventureCon, and it was over towards Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And I remember going over there, this is before I was even doing a podcast, but I did do interviews for it. I've still got them somewhere. I talked to the lady who was in the suit for the special edition who played Greedo, and I talked to Anthony Forrest and some other Star Wars celebrities, and met Billy Dee Williams. It was kind of crazy because it was very, very small scale. And it was big to me at the time. It was the first time I experienced it. But Star Wars was only a small part of the comic book convention, which I think is almost a testament in some ways to the way Star Wars is or was in these past couple of years, is that these comic book conventions, they will have a Star Wars presence, but unless it's actually a Star Wars celebration, it's not really quite the same. You don't have that fervor behind Star Wars, although I think that's going to change very soon. Because we've had episode 7 come out, and I've got to ask, we mentioned Celebration, Savannah. Did you have any idea that new films would come out? Because I've talked to some fans who had a good inkling, and then I myself was clueless. So I'm curious where you were on that.
I actually had a couple hints and thoughts on it with Kathleen Kennedy. I knew she'd be involved somehow, but I didn't want to like believe it. And then once it came out, I was like, oh my goodness, this is for real. And it just took me by surprise. And another thing that really shocked me was when Disney bought Star Wars. That took me a while to actually sink it all in and grasp that.
Yeah, because you're quite the Disney fan too, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yes, I when I heard the news, it was Riley who first told me. We'd gotten home late from a dinner out with friends, and Riley was like, Bethany! Disney bought Lucasfilm. And I stared at Riley for a second and I was like, here, you're, I mean, you're, why would you even joke about something like that? That's just so weird. And lo and behold, it was true.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Me. I was like, they're lying to me. Everybody's lying to me. Even William Devereaux is lying to me, and he never lies. I'm in bizarro Earth. Help, I want to go home.
Yeah.
Yes, I was so excited to hear the news, and I knew a bunch of Disney fans like you, like Teresa, a couple other people that I'm friends with who were also really excited about it, and I'm still excited about it.
Yeah, and then the mashups began.
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
Well, I'm curious, before we dive too deep into Episode 7, because there's some Episode 7 news that we'll cover in just a moment, but Savannah, I'm curious, what was your first exposure to the wars, to the to that galaxy far, far away?
Oh my goodness. Going back to probably toddlerhood, my mom is a huge Star Wars fan. She grew up with it and she trained my brother into it. And then eventually they sucked me in. But I didn't get like to be a diehard fan until a few years ago. I think it was 2010. I met Ashley Eckstein at Star Wars Weekends and I just got sucked in after that. I was like, this is just what I like. And the whole fangirl movement kind of helped as well. But I've always been exposed to Star Wars. It's just as of the past few years, I've really gotten obsessed with it.
Now, did you follow along with the prequels as they came out, or was that kind of something that you got into later?
Yes, I did follow along with those. I actually remember seeing Episode 3 in theaters, but I don't remember seeing the other ones in theaters. Although I know I did, Episode 3 is the only one I actually remember.
Wow. So that's interesting, because I was thinking, what was it? What was the missing piece? Because once you met Ashley, I'm assuming it was Clone Wars that got you more invested.
Yes, I actually watched a little bit of Clone Wars before meeting Ashley, because my brother was really into it. And I'm like, oh, I'll check it out. But I just didn't get into it. And then after meeting Ashley, I'm like, oh, I'll give it another chance and I'll check it out. And it just clicked. Season 2 was when I really started getting into it. Cad Bane was my first fangirl little character that I really liked. Mm-hmm. And then I got more into the Clone Troopers, which is my thing right now. So it just kind of progressed from that.
Mm-hmm. What was the missing piece from the prequels? Because there is this huge fangirl movement, and you're definitely out there with many prominent Star Wars fangirls out there proclaiming your fandom. But like I say, I'm really only observing it in the past 2-3 years since Clone Wars has really been going strong.
The prequels for me, I mean, they just don't have enough like classic Star Wars to them. I like the original trilogy much better than the prequels, and I'm not sure why exactly. Like, I guess it's just because it's so classic, and that's like what I grew up with when I was younger. And then I saw the prequels, and then I've gotten to Clone Wars after that. But I also think that the characters in the original trilogy interest me a little bit more than the prequels. And the prequels, you just have Anakin and Padme mostly, and I prefer Han and Leia. And then in the Clone Wars, I'm more into like Obi-Wan and Satine and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's more of the different characters to you.
Right. Yeah, I'm really into the characters. So in the prequels, the Anakin Padme romance doesn't really interest me. The Clone Troopers are really the only characters that I absolutely love in the prequels.
But Savannah, Anakin couldn't breathe. Being around her was intoxicating, you know?
Yeah.
I love drunk, like Lando Calrissian.
Yeah. Oh, right. Riley and I have a never-ending round.
R2-D2 is watching her.
Hey, you better snitch him out.
Yeah, so I'm curious, Savannah, as you've gotten more involved in Star Wars and in the fan community, what have been some unexpected surprises for you? What's really taken you by surprise as a fan?
I would say realizing that there are other diehard fangirls out there like me, and also getting to meet people just at like Celebration for sure, Star Wars weekends. You run into people and you talk to them, and then you become like best friends with them, and the friendship started off of just simply Star Wars. And so it's really cool to see how those relationships grow and how you can just make connections with people over movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when did you first really get into the fan community online?
I would say it was probably last summer. I found the Star Wars Underworld. I found you guys. I just got on Facebook more, Twitter, and realized that there were other people out there that liked the same things I liked. And I started following a few blogs. Then I created my own website. And that's really where it took off.
Mm-hmm. Have you enjoyed the process of having your own website?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I actually started my blog just because a few of my close friends had them. And they're like, oh, you should start a blog. I'm like, okay. And I didn't know what I was doing. I would just wrote about silly things that I liked. And then I realized that, hey, you know, people actually read this and like it. I guess I should take it seriously and do it more. And so I just became more interested in it. And it almost became as a process of like self-expression to just kind of get off what was on my mind and talk about Star Wars. And people commented, and it was nice to meet people that way. If they found my blog, they would send me an email and we would just get to chatting about that. So it was really fun.
Wow, definitely. Cool. And you mentioned when you're talking about the prequels, so are you a fan of the idea if they bring back the big three, Harrison, Carrie, and Mark?
Oh, see, I would love to see Harrison Ford again because I'm a huge fan of him, but I'm uneasy because they're older now and it's not the same. And I think we need something fresh. I wouldn't mind if they had like a small role, but I think the idea of them playing big parts in the sequel trilogy now just kind of worries me.
Yeah, so you would see them more as, and I've seen this bandied around quite a bit with them maybe returning, but more as roles of mentors or sort of passing the torch, or I should say the lightsaber on to the next generation.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Well, it's interesting because I've already heard a lot of speculation about how J.J. Abrams works as a filmmaker, and I think this is a good opportunity to kind of swing into Episode 7 news. I feel like I need the... all right, entertain the people, Bethany. I don't want to move
and
forward.
And now, on the taps.
I didn't want to move on until... Watch YouTube play a pre-roll ad. There we go. That's more like it. Talking about Star Wars Episode 7, now helmed by J.J. Abrams. All right, that's it. That's Star Wars. Still,
that was magical.
Yeah, I cannot believe that we're gonna see that, and then a long time ago, in the galaxy far, far away. That's gonna be crazy.
It's going to be amazing.
So J.J. Abrams, it's official. By the way, today, I don't know if you saw last week's show. We had some fun with co-host on fellow podcast on our network, Jason Hunt. Love you, Jason. He was
good man.
Very convinced that it was lies, all lies. We did a live show. This was Thursday night. The news was breaking. Rumors were spreading. And then The Wrap picked it up. And then more sites started confirming it. The Hollywood Reporter. And then it was the New York Times. And then it was, you know, all these mainstream press outlets started confirming the fact that J.J. Abrams is indeed directing Star Wars Episode 7. So I'll tell you what. That got me excited. I had to go for the Star Trek.
Riley, you do know that this was written in the stars from the beginning, right? We have the OT, the original trilogy. We've got the PT, the prequel trilogy. Now we have the SD, the Star Trek. I mean, it was coming the whole time.
Well, I guess so, but Jason didn't see it coming, so I am the proud winter. I am the proud winter is coming.
The winter eater of meat.
Yeah, I am the proud winner of a $20 restaurant bet as to whether or not it was true. And I feel almost kind of guilty because I've followed Star Wars news long enough to where I knew the fact that these mainstream sites were picking up the story. They weren't just backlinking to the rap story that afternoon. I was pretty sure that
they had their own sources.
These kind of journalistic entities actually would be making the phone calls to independently confirm it. Which, by the way, that day I was kind of tempted to, you know, email up the rap or, find a phone number of some kind and say, it's Riley Blanton from StarWarsReport.com. Hey, I was wondering if I could get in contact with your source. I'm looking for independent confirmation on the rumor. I thought I could play a news source because as much as we love doing StarWarsReport.com, we're not really, our goal is not to necessarily be the first to break all the news. But there it was.
Or to bring our co-hosts onto the show impromptu and then gamble with them and win. I'm sure Jason's like, it's a trap! It was rigged!
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy that Red Lobster, by the way. All right. No, but it was but it was confirmed. It was Saturday evening, basically late at night, actually. It was about 10 o'clock at night when we finally got the official word from Lucasfilm. It is true. Say it ain't so or say it is so. Different people feel different ways about it. But J.J. Abrams is our leader. All hail. Creator. The guy who brought the theatrical portion of the Star Trek franchise back from the dead is directing the next Star Wars film.
Well, and that's not even the only franchise that he's brought back. I mean, he did Mission Impossible, was it 3?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not as familiar with the franchise, but he brought that movie back, and it did quite well. People really liked it.
That seems kind of misleading, though, because Star Trek wasn't really dead. We were just waiting for them to do another movie, and then they decided to do a reboot, which he did an awesome job, but there's still a contingent of next-gen fans that are like, I want Picard back in the chair! And they're still waiting for their movie. I mean, I don't know. It seems a little misleading.
Well,
he rocked it. I'll give it that.
Sure. I mean, it was the best Star Trek film I've ever seen of the two I've seen.
I have to be honest. I haven't seen it.
Oh, really? So you've got some homework to do.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Star Trek, and I have not seen, like, Super 8. So whenever I saw this was released.
What did you think when you saw this?
I was like, who the heck is J.J. Abrams? Like, I'm over here in the dark.
Get
and
off
everybody's
the phone.
Freaking out.
Get off the line. No, I'm kidding.
Do you ever watch the TV show Lost, Savannah?
No, but I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Well, see, this... Okay.
Well, then that would give you nothing really to compare it to.
All right.
Because the other one people are calling for is Fringe, and I'm not really a fan of Fringe. I did like Lost, but I didn't get into it until it was like in the 6th or 7th season, and that's when I started watching it on DVD. But it's kind of got a Quentin Tarantino, like, chopped up, thrown around feel to it. But, I think you'd enjoy Trek. Did you ever watch Thor?
Yes, I did see Thor.
Then you'll love the opening. That's all I got to say.
Well, that's true. I forgot about that. Okay, so basically, and this is, Savannah, this is like a good experiment because there's so much analysis, kind of like an over-analysis of J.J. Abrams when this news breaks. I mean, this is astounding because when my dad emails me because he's like, well, hey, I know Riley likes Star Wars. He probably hasn't heard this yet. But he's like, he emails me and he sends me.
When your dad's little radar is going off, oh, Riley, I better send him this through the Boston Grapevine.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's on CNN, it's on MSNBC, it's on all the big news networks. This it's really weird to see Star Wars back in that super mainstream, pop culture awareness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so J.J. Abrams, Savannah, this actually could probably work pretty well because I think there's so much, as I say, overanalysis and speculation on everything that he does. There probably is a lack of familiarity other than the fact of, yes, he did the new Star Trek film. But J.J. Abrams, again, he's a student of Spielberg and cinema of the 1980s when the blockbuster revolution kind of happened. And he's born in 1966 in his late 40s, and he's been active since Alias was the first series that he worked on, Well, actually, Felicity was the first one, but Alias was the first kind of sci-fi one, as I understand, and that was in 2001. So he's been on the scene for literally maybe 10 years, but this man has done incredible work. He's not on the level of Joss Whedon in terms of God of the Nerds kind of thing, but he does...
But he is getting there.
I kind of honestly get a sense from J.J. Abrams, having seen the new Star Trek, having seen a lot of Fringe, having seen, I haven't seen Mission Impossible, but being familiar with his work in general.
Have you listened to the commentary on Star Trek?
He's
a very excited man, and he is definitely a Star Wars friendly. I mean, he's on multiple times through that movie talked about, well, as we said in the last episode, you know, this scene here is this from Star Wars, and this here is that from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things going in that made me excited for the Star Trek franchise. I'm a Trekkie, you know, before I ever got into Star Wars. So having those two cross in that direction was awesome. And now having it kind of reverberate and kick back, if you will, kind of like paying threefold.
Yeah. Though I have not seen every Star Trek series, I have watched all of the original series, a fair amount of The Next Generation, and some of the movies, the older ones, and the new movie as well. But you could really compare the two franchises until this most recent reboot that J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek. But you could call... There's a major difference, and it's actually completely clarified in the title. Star Wars is more like a saga about a universe at battle, good versus evil. Star Trek has more of the themes of exploration in the physical sense and exploration of different cultures and characters and philosophies. So they both have their place, but almost everyone would agree, and this was the universal statement, that J.J. Abrams... Star Warsified Star Trek in the 2009 Star Trek.
Indeed. Well, and another thing about what he did there was they had a show called Enterprise, which was before Kirk had the Enterprise with Captain Archer. And they updated the graphics on that so much that there was that disconnect that a lot of people had with the prequel trilogies. We're like, really? This is so much more high tech than what I'm supposed to be expecting. And they had that same kind of effect. And then they would have... The original series was being redone on air, and they were updating the graphics of the ship on the outside shots to kind of bring it up to line with what the Enterprise show had kind of upgraded the technology for that time period. So he also had to kind of contend with that and keep that show also in mind as they were doing stuff, because a lot of people were like, well, that didn't look like how the technology is supposed to look. Well, they were kind of going off of that Enterprise theme, and that was kind of setting the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Abrams, I said it on the last show, but and I said it twice the last show, and it still bears repeating. Savannah, the first 12 to 15 minutes of Star Trek 2009 remain to this day the best opening sequence of a film I've ever seen.
Really?
In terms of, well, and I'll put a slight caveat within the realm of sci-fi and fantasy. Would you call that, maybe not fully agree with that, Mark, but could you see where I'm coming from there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's put it like this. It definitely rivals the opening of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, so, but basically, it's not really a spoiler because it happens at the beginning of the film, but, you know, spoiler alert for you guys if you haven't seen the film. And Savannah, feel free to smash your headphones against the desk that you're sitting at and run screaming from the Skype call. No. But so basically, the first 12 minutes of the... And because this, I think, is highly pertinent to Star Wars, by the way, sets up how Captain Kirk's mother, who's at the time expecting... is pregnant. There's a big, huge spaceship attack. I won't go into details for the sake of spoilers. There's terrible danger. And this is like the one-sentence summary, but it is beautifully done.
Sets her into premature labor.
Yes.
Because she wasn't supposed to have him in space. He was supposed to be born in Montana. And so that's when the timeline shifts.
Yes. Dun, dun, dun. And so basically... What it tells the story of how, in the long and short of things, Kirk's father dies, saving his wife and child, and of course everyone else on the ship at the time, giving them time to evacuate and escape, and sacrifices himself. Now, there are plenty of television shows or movies that have that story of sacrifice at the beginning of the film. I mean, you name it. Even Star Wars, where it's, you know, Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen. But Abrams, within, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, I think portrayed characters and made characters more engaging and interesting and sympathetic than any other film that I've seen. And that was what was key, because Abrams in that particular instance, I think, had as good of an understanding of how to visually tell you the story of human characters making human choices in the most relatable way possible. And I would compare it to Peter Jackson's ability to do that in Lord of the Rings. So
kind of like Up. If yes. You've never watched the beginning of Up, yeah. It's one of those. Very, where you're just like, oh,
and my Savannah, goodness. You remember the montage that was told in Up? That's a very similar skill set of being able to not with a bunch of dialogue, not with anything too exaggerated, but just simply make you, if you sit in the audience in there and you think, I wonder what I would do in that situation, and you can't decide what you would do in that situation. That's the kind of storyteller that J.J. Abrams is. So needless to say.
Yeah. Well, here's another one for you. If you're an EU fan and you've read the book Mercy Kill, there's a chapter in there that explains the title. And when you get there, you're like, oh, no, oh, no. And in that opening scene, there's a moment like that when Captain Kirk sits down in the chair and you realize something's damaged and you're just like, you have that sinking moment. And it's like, like you said, a mini movie in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. And then, of course, the film actually from there fast forwards, you know, 20 years or however long it is, and you see young Kirk, and then it continues on with his story. And Savannah, I would actually highly encourage you, that would be actually a really interesting film to see, because I think there are the obvious comparisons that are already being made as to, you know, he already Star Warsified Star Trek, so now he's actually doing Star Wars. And it's interesting because in most of the discussion I hear, it's very, very, very cursory, very light weight in terms of the way people are actually approaching this. And I think we're going to be in the trenches for the next year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, depending on whether or not they postpone it.
Bunker down, Boston's. We're in the trenches.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about that. I'm Colonel Meeber Gascon. We're going to be in the trenches.
Man, you're actually pretty good with that one. Stanton would approve.
I hope so.
I think he rubbed off on you last time he was on.
That's true. So, but I think we're going to be here, and these are the kinds of discussions that I would love to have with you guys, because I think what Abrams, it's not just the obvious comparisons. I think the fact that Disney got Abrams, I think that is the likelihood of death in the first act of the movie of one or all three of the main characters just skyrocketed.
Mind blown.
You know, you're right.
I mean, have you, Bethany's staring at me.
Curse you!
I mean, have you thought about that? That's one of the first things I thought about.
I've been thinking that for the last one. I didn't even think about starting it off. Like, I mean, well, think about New Jedi Order. What better way to kick that off? Well, let's just kill the Wookiee.
Yes.
Oh man, what if they kill the Wookiee again? Oh, I mean, why? What if they drop a moon on Chewie all over again and have to watch it on film? Oh,
I don't know if we could survive. Mm-hmm. No, but I think, and that's the kind of thing that we can think about. I think when that's what we can, I think, draw from when it comes to the direction Disney's taking this.
And what makes it interesting though is how, like you said, Riley, there are some aspects of this that are very simple, but there are also some things that makes it seem almost like one of those things when you look back on it that it was possibly meant to be. Because, I mean, George Lucas and Lucasfilm originally, who originally created Pixar? Am I right in thinking?
Yep, Lucas.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a product of ILM, yeah.
So they then kind of went their separate ways, and then Disney bought Pixar.
Yep.
Then Disney bought Marvel. Then Disney bought Lucasfilm. But Kathleen Kennedy...
And then they bought the...
Kathleen Kennedy worked for Steven Spielberg for a long time. Steven Spielberg has worked with George Lucas multiple times.
Yep.
J.J. Abrams is a student of the Spielberg film
in
philosophy.
In fact, it's at this point, I don't have direct.
And Abrams has
audio
been
of this.
A Star Wars fan pretty much all of his life.
Yes.
If you
but very
read,
open about it.
Yeah, very open about it. And actually, Bonnie Burton wrote something for StarWars.com about that.
Yeah.
Go read it if you're interested in hearing about
J.J. Yeah, that's
J.
on the
Abrams
official
fandoms.
Star Wars blog. But yeah, yeah, I mean, we have. So, I mean, essentially, it sounds to me like Disney has created their dream team.
Yeah, basically.
You have
it's like the Olympics when they let pro basketball players in.
Yeah.
Something.
But exactly. And that's why Disney, in handling Pixar so well, in handling their acquisition of Marvel so well, you know, basically they're like, Marvel, we're buying you, but we're not stamping out your creative freedom. We are here to support you with our massive Disney powers. And they seem to be doing the same with Lucasfilm, because basically they let Kathleen Kennedy, who is basically trying to follow what George Lucas would want for the company, they're allowing Kathleen Kennedy to run with the project. Because Kathleen Kennedy was the one who got J.J. Abrams by calling him and setting up a personal meeting after he had already said no.
And I
want to
get into that. In fact, the Hollywood Reporter did a pretty in-depth profile of how this all went down. We'll get to that in just a second. But Bethany, you just kind of breezed past something there that I want to kind of focus on. It's like we were driving down the highway and it's like, oh, look, there's the car crash. And usually most people want to go by. I'm like, let's park there where you said Kathleen Kennedy's doing what George Lucas would want. I said, is she? Because, I mean, there's the rub. Because George handpicked Kathleen Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Does that mean Kathleen Kennedy is going to be George Lucas's puppet? Because I've seen a lot of people say that. It's like, yeah, George Lucas is a consultant and he's gonna make her do everything and ruin it, and he's going to put Jar Jar Binks in it. But I mean, if when
because
you think
the
about
inclusion
but
of Jar Jar Binks automatically means great evil. Sorry, continue.
Happened pretty okie day. No, but this when I hear when I hear people say that Kathleen Kennedy is going to be a puppet of George Lucas, and this is not the majority at all, but I think there is a school of thought that has that's of the thing that people are worried about. That's something that people are worried about, is that Kathleen Kennedy is not going to do right by Star Wars. And by do right, people mean strongly diverge from the direction that the prequels happened, which I think would be a mistake. But
that's been a theme with EU fans, too, because there are those that like George's vision, and there are those that don't like when the EU doth stray from George's vision. But I think you're right in the aspect, Riley, that Kennedy was hired to do what's right for Lucasfilm, not to do what's right for George's vision. And
and it's interesting because George handpicked Kathleen Kennedy. And I think that's kind of, in some ways, been missed by people. Because I think more people would actually be worried about the Star Wars if they realized how much mutual respect these two have and how much I think Kathleen Kennedy is in league with George's vision. I think that's a good thing. But I think if more people were aware of this, they would actually think that this is not as good of a thing. But when you're talking about the Kennedy Marshall Company, you're talking about really probably the most, one of the most, but if, you know, if not, certainly possibly the most powerful woman in Hollywood, who's produced tons and tons of high profile blockbuster films, mm-hmm. who has a very strong vision and a strong will. And now we can get into the Hollywood Reporter does a fantastic, like, 5-page novella about mm-hmm. Kathleen Kennedy. It's their feature. It's front cover of the magazine. I think how she got J.J. Abrams is proof of her type of personality.
I suppose to touch briefly on what you're saying, is she a puppet or not, or how will people view her that way? She was handpicked by George Lucas. She and George Lucas have a lot of mutual respect for each other, which they've made clear. She has called George Lucas her Yoda, basically the person giving her advice about Star Wars. But if you look at her filmography, and if you look at her film career, you will see a woman who will call the company fronting the money for a movie and say, you know what? The director of this movie and I are not happy with the script. We're trashing it. We're starting from scratch. It's a waste of $40,000, but it's not going to be a good movie anyway. And here's my plan to move forward with it.
Yeah.
Which happened. So she's been called a director's producer, meaning that she tries to make the director's vision happen when she produces on a film. And I think that's important, where she's trying to make a vision happen in the best way that she sees fit. And I think that she has the knowledge and experience to do so.
Well, I mean, think about Joss Whedon there. I mean, if the producers would have backed him in that regards, Firefly would have never died. They would have never shown that show out of order. The producer's the one that made that choice, and it backfired horribly.
Right, yeah, exactly. But another thing is...
Can I read a quote from the Hollywood Reporter article for a moment?
Sure.
So this is the part that jumped out to me that I saved out. I said, basically, Kennedy had already... This is kind of the story. Gather around the fire, children. This is how it all went
Grab
down.
Some marshmallows and some sticks. We're making s'mores.
Kennedy had already called Beth Swoffer, who is J.J. Abrams' CAA agent, and she had been told that Abrams was too deeply engaged in the next Star Trek movie and other obligations at Paramount, not to mention the innumerable television projects, to consider the job. Nonetheless, Abrams agreed to meet with Kennedy December 14th in his Bad Robot offices in Santa Monica. Now, I need, like, spy novel music. It's like, dun, 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 dun. There it goes, there it goes. Dun, 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 dun. Dateline, December 14th, Bad Robot Production Studios in Santa Monica, California. Famously plain spoken, she summarizes her pitch like this. Please do Star Wars. And she had her cards to play. Not only was Oscar winner Michael Arndt from Little Miss Sunshine and Toy Story 3 writing the script, but Lawrence Kasdan, who of course is the writer of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, is on board to consult. So Abrams, quote, was flipping out when he found out that Michael and Larry were on the movie already. That's a quote from Kennedy. So basically, that's how it happened. They're sitting at the table. At one end is J.J. Abrams. At the other end is Kathleen Kennedy. And they kind of look at each other for a moment. And Kathleen's like, J.J., please do Star Wars. And JJ's like, well, man, I don't know. I'm doing the Star Trek thing, and I've got to produce the next Star Trek film, and I don't know. Fringe is about to end, and you know, I'm really busy. I mean, I'd love to, and it sounds so great. And Kathleen Kennedy just kind of looks over there. And then she sits down an iPad. And the iPad is of the Man's Chinese Theater in California, opening week of Star Wars, 1977. And there are people round the corner, and the next corner, and the next corner. Blocks and blocks of people. And she just kind of plays that for about 2 or 3 minutes. Like this really awkward, just 3 minutes of footage. And J.J. Abrams, slowly his will crumbles.
Who can
and
resist?
He's like... And then at the very end, she turns it off. The assistants in the room are in stunned silence. And she just says, J.J. Abrams, like Kathleen Kennedy, please do Star Wars. This is how I envision it in my head. Anyway.
See, I see it different. I see her dropping those names. And as soon as he does, him getting so excited, he just starts dropping F-bombs. He's like, ah!
Yeah, but
you know, he calls his wife. He's like, "Honey, I know I'm already busy, but I'm not going to see it for the next 3 years because I'm making Star Wars Episode 7." I mean,
that was actually who turns that down. Sorry to interrupt, Mark. I'll let you continue. But that was actually one of his concerns. Was actually just committed family time. It just because this is a huge deal. But
I'm only on 3 podcasts, and it cuts into my family time a bit. I mean, I couldn't imagine filming 2 movies, let alone a TV show, and then you're going to tackle something this big.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an understanding wife right there.
Yeah. So I mean, that's how I imagine this conversation going down. And you know what? It is very simply Star Wars.
Yeah.
You just simply don't turn it down. I mean, it was revealed that his assistant said no.
JJ, honey, Star Wars is knocking. You answer the door. Who says no to that?
Oh, goodness. But part of what's amazing to me about this is how Kathleen Kennedy has she's flown under the radar for decades now. I mean, she's been involved in DreamWorks films, in most of Spielberg's films, you know, anything from Twilight Zone to Indiana Jones to Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many amazing movies. Schindler's List, she was the executive producer on that. She was a producer in Lincoln, which came out in 2012.
Yeah, that's up for a bunch of awards, yeah.
Yep, she's been a producer on many amazing titles. And the story that I actually mentioned before was the DreamWorks CEO says that she experienced Kennedy's competence back in 2000 when, as the chairman of Universal, they were weeks away from the start of filming on Jurassic Park 3 with $18 million already spent. And Stacy says, I was in New York and my phone rang. And as my foot stepped into the crosswalk, Kathy said, Stephen and Joe Johnston aren't happy with the script. We're going to pull the plug. And by the time I got to the other side of this wide boulevard, she had told me what the plan was, how the $18 million would be rendered productive, and how they would fix the script and restart the movie. All from one end of the sidewalk to the other, something horrible happened, and yet she had a perfect solution. Anyway, just one example, and I'm surprised that this woman has managed to kind of remain hidden in the background for decades in the Hollywood
industry. Not anymore.
Industry.
It's coming up. Star Wars Episode 7 coming out 2015, we think. We'll be right back. We haven't even had time to talk about Michael Giacchino because Abrams, that's like his favorite composer, so if it weren't going to be John Williams, you never know, it might hear something like... okay, but no, we don't have time. Oh, well. But we do have time to talk about this. And by this, I mean Clone Wars. Alliances can stall intentions.
I'm Tom Kane and Willard Mandalore.
And I'm Narrator Smurf.
Okay, so here we go. We're going to take the next 20 minutes or so and really break down as we are wont to do, especially as these seasons. It's like it's the last half every time. It, you know, as Dave said, we're getting serious now. It's Maul, Savage, in this case, just simply Maul v. Vizsla. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this week's episode of The Clone Wars, again, drop your headphones on your desk, run screaming from the podcast.
Major spoiler.
It's the spoiler!
Spoiler alert. Spoiler. Okay, so... all right, so we've already talked about last week's episode, but I want to bring Savannah. I want to bring you in and just get your thoughts because I kind of realized we kind of nerded out all over the movie industry.
That is completely fine. I feel like I've let you guys down because I'm not a well-rounded geek for being into Star Trek, but Clone Wars is my thing, so I can talk about.
See,
this.
And it's funny because there's a we'll get into Clone Wars in a second. Hang on, in a quick side trail. I'm so sick of the stereotype that that Savannah, you're not helping, by the way. The stereotype that Star Wars fans hate Star Trek and vice versa. It's not true. That's so 1980s. Like that's like the Next Generation era. I mean, we're far past that.
Well, I don't think Savannah's really talking about that so much as another note, which is that in order to be a well-rounded geek, you have to be familiar with certain franchises. Because
I think
that you are the perfect well-rounded geek, Savannah. Oh, you are cool.
The well-rounded part comes in from having the desire. You know, if you come in here and it's like, well, I want to do my one little thing and I don't care about everything else, you can't quite really call yourself well-rounded. I mean, you got to be open to the rounding and filling out the corners of the square. Because I'm an L7 weenie, man.
I'm very open to Star Trek. I've never been against it. It's just that I've not been exposed to it. I've never thought about, hey, I'll go watch Star Trek. It's always, oh, pop in Clone Wars, pop in Star Wars. Sure. No.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all right, back to Clone Wars. Well, I think we need to do a whole episode on stereotypes of Star Wars and Star Trek fandom, and then I think we also need
to do a whole fun.
Yeah. So but Savannah, what have you thought of not just this arc so far, but like the whole season? Where are you with Clone Wars in 2013?
Okay, so with season 5, I went into this season not expecting anything. I just wanted to take it as it went, because with season 4, I hyped myself up so much, okay, and then I was a little bit let down.
We all were here. I did the same thing.
You gotta watch out for the hype hypo.
And I do it every time, and I'm like Dobby, bad Riley. Bad.
Riley, you just took a double dose of the hype hypo. You're in for disappointment, buddy.
But, I mean, the trailer at Celebration, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Savannah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm trying not to hype myself up too much for season 5. And especially with the beginning of the season, I was kind of bored with most of those arcs. The Young Jedi arc was great, but it was a little slow for me. There weren't enough clone troopers at all. Gregor was the first thing that really caught my attention. And since that one episode with Gregor, I've been in love with it.
Okay, so you're on board.
Yes,
the train had left the station, but you decided to get on at the next stop, so to speak.
I'm totally on board now. I think the second half is going to be a lot better than the first half for my personal taste.
I agree with you, and I think, I mean, let's get real here for a minute, because everything else you listened to before this wasn't real at all; it was completely fake. But. No. But in all seriousness, we not only is the hype a factor, but I think, and I've kind of in kind of bitter self-reflection, realizing that I think I'm wanting Clone Wars to be something that it simply isn't going to be.
I agree.
I mean, Walking Dead fans go through this a ton, I think, with season 2. Where this is, I mean, for you guys who haven't seen Walking Dead, it's kind of pointless, but and there's a very similar thing where if you read the comics, there's a really, really, what I would say is very engaging story about people's survival in a post-apocalyptic world and you know, human choices. Like I say, everything kind of boils back down to that. And then the television series kind of just screeched to a halt. And for an entire first half of a season of Walking Dead, after a huge momentum, literally nothing happened, really. I mean, I'm not even going to go into all the details. You guys who watch Walking Dead probably sympathize.
Wait. Are you talking season 2?
Yes.
But for the comic fans, that first half was epic, because you were just like, what's going to come out next? What's going to be around that corner? But yeah, I could see how if you hadn't read the comic, though, you'd be like, okay, what's going to happen?
Maybe I'm mixing my season. I mean, I'm not like a huge Walking Dead fan or anything. I have watched some of it, but I was trying to remember, having read the comics, it was the Where's Carl thing. And there was a pretty universal, like, there's a lot of memes about that. Anyway. We're talking about Clone Wars, though, but I think that we can sometimes do that. I simply don't think Clone Wars is going to tell a big linear story. I do still hold out hope that the end of this season, from what I've heard, is fantastic, and that through the next season that we will get that maybe two, maybe three arcs that really propel the story of Star Wars forward.
Well, I got a quick question for you then. What would you think if they officially said that this version of the Clone Wars was in fact a kid's cartoon set in, you know, the sequel trilogy or something like that? I mean, that's the EU fans' way of accepting the Clone Wars. But as a Clone Wars fan, could you accept that, or would that just feel like blasphemy to you?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't feel like blasphemy. I would certainly live on and be able to go about my days without being particularly injured too much. But I mean, I wouldn't be a fan. I think Clone Wars is still, in terms of production quality, for if you're a Star Wars fan, the best show on TV.
Absolutely.
And I think there's too much. And it's really hard, because sometimes it's very easy, because I hear this all the time of people literally just really ticked off about the Clone Wars, saying, being really frustrated. And I don't want to be that person, because in this case, I'm really just talking about what the potential that's there. Does that make sense at all?
Well,
potentially.
I think that the Clone Wars, for a long time, for people who weren't particularly fans of the expanded universe, the Clone Wars to them was what was Star Wars. I think in some ways the expanded universe, the Clone Wars, and a number of things like that, instead of necessarily adding to a great universe and adding great stories to a great universe, that people kind of clung to it as a, well, this is the only Star Wars that I'm going to get. And so as such, they're expecting movie-level epicness from it when it is a cartoon and a children's cartoon. So I think to some degrees it is, like you said, something where you can't expect certain things from it because it's not going, the horse is not going to be a dog.
It's not going to be the live action series. It's not going to be the Deadwood in space. It's not going to be that, that level.
But it's going to be the Clone Wars, and as such, it's going to have its own very special, enjoyable aspects to it that nothing else Star Wars really has. And
landing at Point Rain.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Those were some amazing episodes. That Ryloth arc was mind-blowing.
Yes.
All right, I want to take, because we're doing it again, guys. We're in the last 10 minutes or so, and we haven't even talked about the episode. We get, like, these long, long tangents about, like, these ethereal, you know. So what does it mean for the greater psychological impact of the... No, but you know, back to...
This is Mandalore!
Exactly. Well, Maul is back, and he is furthering the proof that... he's furthering the proof that he's not the savage, thoughtless monster that we all kind of thought he was. And one thing I want to play is this clip for you guys. So stand by, and here we go. Darth Maul challenges Mos Eisley to a duel. Mark, I gotta ask, did you ever think on screen in Star Wars, it was 2-3 years ago, reading a Republic Commando novel, it'll say, that you would hear the phrase, "For Mandalore! For Aslan!" Wait, wrong movie.
Not in the Clone Wars. I mean, I really didn't expect that. Though, when they did go Mandalore... and we saw pacifistic Mandalores and everybody started screaming, "The sky is falling," and all that. I did kind of have a feeling that this day was going to be coming, because we all knew that come the original trilogy, the warriors were the last Mandalores we knew about, because we didn't know anything about these pacifists. So I had a feeling something along this line was brewing, but not how it went down. And then when we, you know, Savannah was talking about how getting hyped up. Well, I did the same thing. I did not want to see most of those trailers. I didn't want to buy into the hype. I didn't want to take the hype hypo. And so I was like, no, thank you. I do not need one of those shots. Riley can have my extra one. And, you know, so when I started to see the whole Maul fighting the Mandos, Maul and Mando gear, I was like, where are we going with this? And I'm pleasantly surprised with what I've been getting so far. And yet it still feels very true to what I know about the Mandalorian culture in the EU. So I am very much excited and amped about that.
Let's rewind to 1977, where we first hear about the Clone Wars, and it was 1978 in the novelization of A New Hope by the author that I forget his name. We need Nathan Butler on. But
Alan Foster?
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, where the Mandalorians are mentioned, and it was mentioned that they were a great enemy of the Jedi. And I think we're finally, long before even the Republic Commando novels came out, long before any of that mythology was really developed, long before even Attack of the Clones, I think many of us, after seeing Boba Fett in the original trilogy, thought about what it would be like to see, what it would be like to see a battle between a Mandalorian and a Jedi. And we got something that's very close to that. We got Pre Vizsla leader of the Death Watch, fighting Darth Maul. Now, this is where it's getting spoilery, and where we're going to have to get into our final thoughts as well, guys, because we're getting towards the towards the end of the episode.
I'm interested in what you're saying, because I think I saw it differently than you.
Well, see, it's so early on, it's hard to tell, but I think that we're going to see the Mandalorian Wars really see the Jedi have a great enemy and become greatly weakened. The Clone War is about to become the Clone Wars as this third faction that Darth Maul's building comes to be, and I cannot wait. Mark, what do you think? Your final thoughts.
Okay, I like that. That's a very cool theory. When I saw the fight, though, one thing that I noticed and I thought it was very interesting was that Maul was not calling on the Force that much. He really went toe-to-toe with Pre Vizsla. And I think that he did that in an act of respect. He followed their traditions. He challenged him to one-on-one duel. He is Mandalore. Maldalore. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe where we're going with this. And, hey, if Riley, your theory is right, I am there with popcorn and butter, my friend.
Savannah, I'm very anxious to hear. What are your final thoughts on this episode, this arc, and what you're looking forward in the rest of the season?
It was a bittersweet episode for me because I'm still getting used to the fact that Maul is here to stay. I have to say that I really loved him in this episode, though, and I have completely hated him in past Clone Wars episodes. So
really?
This is great. I was very sad over Vizsla dying because he's one of my favorite characters. But really great episode, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season, especially more Darth Sidious, because I think he's a really cool character.
Well, and I don't know, Savannah, after seeing that clip from the Clone Wars Season 3 trailer, Sidious versus Maul versus Vaj, I wouldn't be so certain about Maul's here to stay-ness.
For now, I'm saying. Next episode, I know we're getting him again, and it's just, I didn't like him at first, and I didn't want to like him. And now, especially with Sam Witwer's awesome voice work, it's just kind of sucking me in, and I'm kind of liking him a little bit.
I know. I just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. Your final thoughts on the episode, Bethany?
I'm really enjoying this arc, and I have been a fan of Maul from the beginning, and particularly Sam Witwer's take on the character. But it's very interesting to me to see Maul really flesh out. He's not just an evil creature with a singular mind for revenge, but, you know, he's going all Sidious on us. He's making plans, and he's really putting into motions things that won't be easily undone by the Jedi or by the Senate.
I know. I mean, I think we're in for the best Clone Wars we've ever seen. And as much as, you know, the expectations are always high, the last half of the seasons of both of Season 4 and I think now Season 5 will certainly fill those expectations. That does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Wow, Savannah, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you for having me on. Had a great time.
Awesome, and we'll definitely love to have you back sometime, and maybe we will cross paths sometime this year at one convention or another. You never know.
I hope so. That would be awesome.
Yeah, maybe Star Wars weekends. We'll see. We're working out dates, but we're hoping to hopefully hit one of them up, so that would be awesome. And Mark, as always, pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, guys. Always good to be here. Yes, and you too, you little chrome piece of...
Chrome?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking Astromech unit, but I'm like, well, that kind of doesn't really make sense.
Yes. And again, contact us. You can email StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Facebook/StarWarsReport, Twitter/StarWarsReport, like that. Kind of a cool, it's a hip new way of giving out the URLs. Anyway. And of course, Savannah, where can folks get in touch with you and follow your ongoing journey?
I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/PLCOMI, and then my website link is also PLCOMI.com.
Awesome. And yeah, and guys, it's awesome Twitter and awesome Facebook, and I love the photography. Keep up the great work. I mean, I feel bad we weren't even able to touch on it enough, but we will certainly get all those links in the show notes. Check out Savannah's work in photography. She's fantastic, and man, I'll tell you what, I could never do something like that. It's just, I'm in awe of some of the stuff that you can do as a photographic artist. It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Oh no, you're more than welcome, and we'll be in touch. That does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Also, quick, you know, hit up StarWarsReport.com. You can find out all the information. And more folks every day signing up for our mailing list, and I've got some new exclusives coming through you guys who sign up for the mailing list. That's at starwarsreport.com/mailing list. And that does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Rule my people.